Soccer Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 140, we discuss Tottenham Hotspur launches on US TV, how TV ratings for USA against Mexico compared between FS1 and Univision, FuboTV launches their own TV channel, why it should be easier to watch the Champions League in bars this season, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I am joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, it's at this time of the week that usually we're putting on new T-shirts. The T-shirts, the slogans on the T-shirts say, "I survived the international break." I don't think it was that bad, but there weren't that many really just eye-opening kind of incredible matches. The one I thought was probably the most entertaining I saw was Germany against Netherlands. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree on that. And in fact, the thing that was frustrating about that match, after Germany got really kind of a undeserved penalty, and then they were able to equalize 2-2, was that the Dutch, who were far superior in this match, may not have gotten the full 3 points, but they then got two more goals, the last one being on a counter. Just the brilliant movement, that we've talked about this a lot with Liverpool, of Gini Wijnaldum in midfield, and how good Memphis Depay and Ryan Babel, two players that a lot of English football fans probably mock for their careers in England, being integrated in this Ronald Koeman system. Now, over the last year, Babel has been very, very good for Holland, and he was again very good in this match. So also a very good call from Adrian Healy and Taylor Twellman. One quick note, I don't think Healy and Twellman had been made aware that am I losing my chin? VAR
right.
Wasn't available in this match.
Well, that's
right.
That's the thing, though, too, Kartik. And that's the thing with VAR, though, too. In this day and age that we're living in, we kind of think that, okay, yeah, VAR is going to be used for everything. But as we saw in this, there was no VAR for the qualifiers, for any of the Euro 2020 qualifiers.
So apparently the memo had gotten to Craig Burley. He was in the studio saying, well, it was because they have to have an equal playing field. And if there's a match in San Marino or Andorra or some less equipped stadium, maybe so. Actually, San Marino and Andorra might be able to do it. It's the countries in Eastern Europe that might have trouble with it. There was no VAR. Healy and Twellman, very good. I mean, I'm always impressed by Taylor Twellman, how much he knows about European national teams, how much he knows about European club football, considering right now at ESPN, he's not calling any of that stuff, right? But knew the Dutch team backward and forward, and the German team he knew well as well. The one thing they had not been prepped with was this VAR thing. So Burley in the studio had to keep pointing out there's no VAR for this match, but in the call of the game, Healy and Twellman kept referring to VAR and were quite confused that there was no look given to the penalty and to some other very controversial calls in that match.
Right.
So hopefully the next set of qualifiers, not next set, but next
stage,
that'll be World Cup qualifying for 22, UEFA can get this figured out, because it was very frustrating in this match. But ESPN, quality production. They had quality commentators and a very, very good studio wraparound show pregame, halftime, post-match with the ESPN FC crew. It was Nicol Burley, Dan Thomas, and Alejandro Moreno. The big question now that comes out of this match for me, Chris, is why can't ESPN do this on a regular basis for non-internationals, for the club football that they have, whether it's Serie A or the championship? They just, a lot of times, they just flip games on international feed and that's it.
Yeah, and part of this might be contractual obligations too, where when they won the contract to show Euro 2020 qualifiers as well as Euro 2020, UEFA has them commit to certain levels of broadcast in terms of, and I think this is something that you pointed out, Kartik, last week, or you mentioned to me privately, in terms of even ESPN FC during last week, some of those being on actually television instead of on ESPN Plus. Adrian Healy, I'm not the biggest fan of, to be honest with you. Casey Keller, I have a lot of time for, and I thought Casey did really, really well with this one. But actually, in this match, I think I was the England Kosovo game was the one I listened to Adrian Healy and Casey Keller.
Yeah, this one was Twelman. The Germany.
Yeah, so the Germany Netherlands. I was flipping back.
Yeah,
and
that
forth.
Match was Keller, and I thought, yeah. Jumping ahead to that match, I thought Casey Keller was fantastic in his analysis. And, you know, this is the thing I've noticed about Casey Keller, even when he calls Sounders games in MLS. If there is a defensive error, which there were a lot of in this match, both by England and Kosovo, he has an ability to analyze how the breakdown happened better than even most of the British commentators. I mean, I think he's really good when it comes to those sorts of things. Maybe a 1-0 match, he may not be, although he can explain the defensive solidity, right? But he was fantastic. I agree.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. And I really prefer him in the role of a co-commentator than a kind of a studio analyst. But, I mean, he's good in both, but I think my preferred position for him to slot him in is on that co-commentator position. Now, I was traveling, so I missed the USA-Mexico game on the Friday night, and I got some reports back from it in terms of, nothing on Twitter, I think it was, where they said that, I think at halftime or post-match, they were Fox, or actually during the game itself, Fox had graphics on screen promoting the USA against Uruguay game that was going to be played on the Tuesday with big graphics of Christian Pulisic, even though it was announced on Friday that Pulisic wouldn't be playing. He was going back to Chelsea over the weekend. Really kind of lazy by Fox Sports not to change out the graphic and put something else in rather than going with the Pulisic. Again, another bait and switch. But the USA-Mexico game, Kartik, how did you watch it? And what was the coverage like?
I watched it on 2DNA. And did not turn Fox on. The coverage was really good wraparound coverage. The graphics, the 2DNA, the 2DNA setup seems a lot fresher and a lot more produced than Univision Deportes was. Now, maybe it's just the freshening up of the graphics and the new logos, etc. But it just feels like a really good broadcast, like a really tight broadcast. And Univision was always better than Fox to begin with. So I was really impressed with how they did this. Obviously, if it involves Mexico, they give this sort of coverage. But then they did do a very good job pre-match and at halftime with USA-Uruguay. Post-match, they jumped right to Mexico-Argentina because Mexico was playing after and that's their priority. But at least for USA-Mexico, they were really good in terms of comprehensive coverage. I also want to mention in the wake of this game, again, I didn't watch it on Fox. ESPN FC the next day just had a two-man studio of Seb Salazar and Alejandro Moreno, and they spent a half an hour picking apart the U.S., right? So that I got my fill of English language analysis and good one from that. And we know when it comes to analyzing whether it's the U.S. women or the U.S. men as a studio host, I think Seb Salazar has proven to be the best in the business if it involves U.S. soccer, either at the men's level or the women's level. So that was actually quite a treat and gave me the English language analysis I needed was that ESPN FC show.
Now Tuesday's game, USA against Uruguay, this one again on FS1 and also on Univision. I didn't get to watch the whole game, but the parts of it that I did watch and listen to, Stu Holden, I'll give him full credit. He was a little bit more, I guess, pointed or a little bit more direct in terms of his criticism about this. I guess not really criticism, but more in terms of disappointment with this squad. And in terms of the kind of how they were playing against Uruguay, and Uruguay in terms of possession, just really controlling the match. And the U.S. was oftentimes chasing shadows. I mean, the goal that they scored that was kind of a fluke goal, really. But still, they got the draw, which on paper is good. But I was pleasantly surprised that Stu, because in the past before, he's been very quiet. It's like in games where U.S. have not controlled the match, it's almost like he just doesn't say anything at all.
But I'm not, I'm not sure I accept a lot of the criticism now of the men's national team that's coming, because I think now we're getting agenda-driven analysis of Berhalter, and the fact is he's trying to implement a very – you know, regardless, I know people say, oh, he's an MLS guy and his brother is the – and I get all that. I didn't – I was as critical as anyone of the hiring process, but he's trying to implement a very European style of playing, which in the long term I think will benefit the U.S., unlike Jurgen Klinsmann, who would talk about this stuff, and then when the match came, you wouldn't really see the application of the playing principles Klinsmann talked about. The U.S., part of the U.S.'s problem on Friday was they were trying to play a very Ajax, free-flowing Dutch style, and they just don't have the technical players to execute it.
Right.
So now the narrative, and I don't know if it's coming from Holden. Holden's a smart guy, so I think he's probably seeing this for what it is, right? And he's much more kind of European in his thought process. But the narrative is, oh, we should go back to playing counterattacking football the way we used to, and we would win, and that met the capabilities of our player pool. But the reality, Chris, is football has changed in the 10 years since the U.S. excelled at doing that under Bob Bradley and under Bruce Arena. So, or Bruce Arena's first tenure. And I think Berhalter's thought process as a manager and Ernie Stewart's as the technical director is you're going to need to play out of the back and maintain some possession to move the opposition side to side to open up the spaces. So then you can take advantage of your athleticism and pace and have guys run through the channels. I think there's far too little understanding of that in the American soccer media. Again, I'm criticizing the American soccer media because this is, you know, they don't always understand what they're watching. So even though I have been very critical of the Berhalter hiring, very critical of the way it went about, very critical of U.S. soccer, I now am gaining some sympathy for him because as a manager, again, a tactical manager, I understand what he's trying to do.
Right.
And it seems like the people on television and the people on Twitter, the people writing articles don't.
I guess there's two things to this, though, Kartik, too, because on paper, it makes sense. So on paper, if Ernie Stewart and Greg Berhalter are on a whiteboard, say, okay, this is the vision for the U.S. And playing internationally, this is how we want them to play. And I completely agree with that. The reality is, though, that something like that, the U.S. has never played like that. So that could take 10 years to implement to get to a point where we're comfortable, where it's a natural ability, where the U.S. players are comfortable playing that way. In previous World Cups, in previous Gold Cups, in previous tournaments, throughout our probably living memory, the U.S. has pretty much always been a counter-attacking team, using the physicality at times, but most oftentimes in terms of the endurance, the stamina. I mean, in the World Cup, in the World Cup when the U.S. Came through and got knocked out by Belgium, and you mean that tournament. The feedback, the kind of the analysis of the United States in that World Cup, everyone was saying that, you mean, U.S. completely were kind of one of the talks of the town. They were just, I mean, the British press especially were just enthusing about how, I mean, this U.S. team would never give up. They would just keep on driving, keep on going. That's the challenge that we're under too. Is that and again too from the broadcast and U.S. media is that everyone's looking for those results. They're looking for those short term gains in a system that we're looking at long term. I guess in some ways though too, Kartik, with games coming up in the CONCACAF Nations League, games against Cuba, Canada is going to be a little bit tougher than usual, but it should be still okay. There is time to implement those changes, but whether or not, I guess my biggest concern, my biggest complaint is that I don't have the confidence that the U.S. has the players available to Berhalter that can accomplish what he's trying to do.
I agree. And I think that's the point of discussion is do you shelve those long-term goals for short-term reality that you don't have good technical midfielders and good technical back four that can play with the ball at their feet and understands the quick passing rhythm Berhalter wants and then the possession-based system he's trying to implement. And then, you know, not worry about the long-term goals because you want to qualify for this upcoming World Cup. That's a question you and I can't answer. But that question isn't really even being posed in the media. It's like, oh, well, the U.S. can't play this way because the U.S. has never played this way before. Berhalter needs to tactically adjust. But these are friendlies, and he's trying to put in place a system. Maybe he's going to come up with that same assessment after these two matches. Hey, you know, these guys, the back four, they're not comfortable with the ball at their feet. But – then again, he seemed very stubborn after the match, saying we lost 3-0, but we didn't play any long balls, and that's what he wants to see.
Right.
The U.S. has typically played as many long balls as England and Scotland traditionally did, honestly. So, and relied on set pieces also. So Berhalter was trying to change the playing culture. Maybe it's unrealistic, but I like the fact he's trying, yeah. And don't like the fact that the media and those who analyze the men's national team don't seem to understand what he's doing. They don't get this. Maybe, Chris, because they're not watching European football the way some of us are, and realize this is the way the game as a whole globally has moved in the last 10 years. You watch any team. Top team in Europe, with the exception of Atletico Madrid, although that's beginning to change this season. Mm-hmm. They counter-press high. They try and build out of the back. And there are ways to mix it up, but that's generally their MO. And Stewart and Berhalter want to get the U.S. playing this way.
Right.
And I know that's not the way teams generally play in Major League Soccer or in Liga MX, the leagues that a lot of these people watch. But that is the way the international game has progressed.
The challenge, though, is that will the United States national team, men's national team, lose the audience? And we'll get into that a little bit in the TV ratings. You mean, are U.S. soccer fans going to become more despondent or more disillusioned, really, is probably the best word, with this U.S. men's national team and start tuning out, not watching these games? Because I mean, the U.S. is a very patriotic country. The U.S. as a nation always wants to be the best, always wants to win. And when your national team is going through a transition phase where you're being, I mean, Mexico, I mean, really dominated that game. The Uruguay game was a little bit closer, but that wasn't a full-strength Uruguay squad either. Neither was a full squad, full-strength U.S. squad.
Actually, also, I should mention that game, an MLS guy that scored against the U.S., which is becoming a pattern also. Guys who play in Major League Soccer tend to be more comfortable playing against the United States than the U.S. guys from MLS are playing against the opposition. You know, Wonder Goal, and he's a guy we've watched with LAFC this season and know how capable he is of that. But that, to me, was pretty significant, again, that this seems to be a recurring pattern where in CONCACAF or CONMEBOL, there are MLS-based players that score against the United States.
Exactly. One more thing before we move on to the news, and we've got quite a lot of news this week, is I missed it. You caught it, but the Man City against Man United game in the Women's League in the UK, and it was available via streaming.
Yeah, brilliant WSL this year. If you get the FA Player app, I believe it's called. There are multiple FA apps in the in the App Store and on iOS and on Android and Roku Shop, all of that. It's the FA Player app, and you can watch women's football or the FAWSL consistently on there. So I caught this match, hoping to catch a match this weekend when Premier League or Championship or Bundesliga or Serie A is not playing. It was brilliant, the match. 30,000 plus, really good energy in the crowd, enthusiastic crowd, fantastic wonder goal to win the match. Although I have to say, from a Man City perspective, because I am a Man City supporter and have followed the women's team the last several years, I think closer than most Man City fans, I was a little concerned by how good United looked. Now, they've spent a lot of money.
Right. For a new team, right, though?
For a new team, but how good United looked against us at the Etihad. But that's a football discussion. The broadcast side, very clean and crisp. I wish I could tell you who the match commentators were, but I can't. I didn't. I wasn't able to catch that. Also, Man City's app did a really good wraparound coverage of this match, which they normally don't do for women's matches. So tunnel cam, extended highlight packages, interviews after the match with the players, and covered it the way they would cover a Premier League men's match. Now, I'm not saying I expect this level of coverage going forward. I realize it was an international break. That was part of the strategy of the FAWSL for this weekend. Also, a big crowd at Stamford Bridge for Chelsea's women's match. Mm-hmm. But it does show the appetite for women's football is there among supporters of big clubs. And, Chris, I think significantly the boredom a lot of people in the UK have with international breaks.
Yeah.
They would much rather go to a women's football match live in person with good women's football, especially coming off of England's performance in the World Cup. It, you know, the performance of a lot of clubs, a lot of players that play, you know, now that the Dutch have much of their team in the WSL, et cetera, then sit and watch Euro qualifiers between whomever.
Right.
I mean, with the exception of Germany and Netherlands, because that's a rivalry match, and we know how intense that mm-hmm. rivalry is, one of the most in international world football history. Even matches like England-Kosovo, which were good and entertaining, don't necessarily get people excited. And that's, I think, the point of all of this. And we go through this every international break, right?
One final question I have about the FA Player app is, so for the FA WSL, or the Women's League in England, will that have every match on there?
I believe it will.
Wow.
I mean, every match that there's capable streaming. I mean,
right.
I saw... yeah, I think it was every match. No, in the first division.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's great news.
I think it was five or six things I saw listed on there. So I, you know what? I'll investigate that further and report back next week. But I believe that's the case.
Yeah.
Look, the FA, to their credit, I mean, they were late to the game, but they made an incredible commitment to women's football now. So
yeah,
I think credit where credit is due.
The part I'm surprised with, Kartik, is that there hasn't been much fanfare about announcing that it's actually live, because we reported it probably, 2 months ago, that the FA were launching the FA Player app soon, hopefully in time for the new season, the women's season. But there was no announcement, as far as I know. I mean, no fanfare. So that's good to know that you were able to use it and... in terms of people. And actually, they'll have other content on there, too, not just the Women's Soccer League.
And I didn't have any bugs. You know, I had the usual thing where an alert came on my phone and, you know, the player crashed, and then I muted my do not disturb my things. I'd love to hear if other people watched this match or watched another match on the player and had some technical difficulties, because I didn't. So... which, quite frankly, given the FA's track record, with technology, I wasn't sure if it would be buggy or not, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Then again, you know, I have to, being realistic, there were probably a lot less people watching this match than
true.
Your average men's match that streams. So maybe it just didn't have the capacity, or it didn't need to have the capacity that those streaming platforms do.
All right. Well, let's move on to TV streaming news and some interesting news to start off with.
Yeah, Spurs. Will have agreed with BR Live to launch a streaming partnership which will stream Spurs TV in the United States via BR Live. So pretty exciting news for Spurs fans. Spurs doing all the things that a big club does. They're trying to catch up in the U.S. market on these sorts of things with Liverpool and Man United and Arsenal, who've had their TV channels established, you know, on U.S. TV, whoever it's been, for many years. And then obviously Man City has had the advantage of the partnership with the Yankees to get Man City TV in every Man City TV program basically on in the U.S. if you get the YES, the Yankees network.
Yeah, so Spurs TV, just to add to that too, so Spurs TV has the deal with BR Live this season and next season. It's going to have a weekly show that's going to last approximately 160 minutes, which will include a delayed broadcast of the team's most recent fixture from the Premier League. So usually the way it works is that, say, Spurs plays on a Saturday, Spurs TV will have their in-house TV crew that will... do the commentating for that game, but that game usually wouldn't be available until about Tuesday. So if you wanted to go back and watch that game again, maybe you watched it on NBC or Telemundo or something like that originally, but if you wanted to watch that game again on the Tuesday with the Spurs commentator and analyst, you can do that on the Tuesday. Also, in terms of they're going to have pre-match analysis and post-match analysis of games from the Champions League, FA Cup, and League Cup, as well as manager and player interviews and behind-the-scenes features. So the timing is good for Spurs. I mean, obviously, with NFL games coming to their stadium, a lot of hope for this coming season, too, of course. And if you're a Spurs fan, definitely check out BR Live, because that's the only place to get it. It's exclusive to BR Live.
Spurs fans love to complain about Lee Dixon being on Spurs telecasts on NBC, and then he was not on the Spurs, the North London Derby the other day on NBC, which I was disappointed by. Thought it would be a three-man booth. So this is their chance if they don't like they think the commentators are biased against them to watch a less biased Spurs commentators.
Right. But biased in the other way, though. You mean like really, really pro Spurs?
Right. Exactly. Right. I mean, you never hear the end of Spurs fans complaining about Lee Dixon. So,
yeah.
In fact, I think he's been straight down the middle with them.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, we know the reason for that.
Yeah. Speaking of BR Live, a big announcement today on Thursday as we record this podcast is that it'll make it easier than ever for fans in the United States to go to their local pub or bar or restaurant to watch the Champions League, because BR Live has done a deal with a company called Premium Sports. Now, one of the chief executives at Premium Sports is the same chief executive that used to run Setanta Sports in the U.S. And what they've done is they go to different bars, pubs, again, commercial establishments, and we'll show games there. So, for example, now BR Live, take a typical Champions League match day, and there's 8 games on that day. Only 2 of them are available on English language US television, which is TNT, the early kickoff, the 12:55 Eastern Time, and the 3 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff game. Now, the other 6 games are on BR Live, so if you're in a bar or pub or whatever, usually those games you miss out on. If you go to your local pub, you're not going to be able to watch them there. That is until now. So bars, pubs, restaurants can now sign a deal with Bleacher Report Live and Premium Sports to have a license to go ahead and broadcast those games in the local pub or a bar or restaurant. And for fans of clubs that aren't always on TNT, this is a great way to make sure that your local pub or bar has got a deal in place so you can actually go and watch those games. Same thing for the Europa League too. So the Europa League, Europa League, every single game is not, none of the games are available on TNT. So this gives an opportunity for bars and pubs to go ahead and broadcast those games in the bar. And then, you look at the Europa League this season, you've got Rangers, you've got Celtic, you've got Man United, you've got Arsenal. You've got some very big teams that would not be available on TV, but they will be now if your local bar or pub does the deal with BR Live.
Should also note that this is a positive sign, Chris, as we will probably get a tender from UEFA sometime around the middle toward the end of this season, but a positive sign of the commitment from Turner to try at least make the most of this particular contract and maybe keep going with it.
Absolutely. And it's also another sign, too, of how important out-of-home viewership is. Just as Nielsen reports more and more of this information, and other companies such as Tunity Analytics, which we hope to interview in the near future, talking about they're measuring how many people are actually watching games out of home. So if they're watching whatever game it is, you mean Champions League, Premier League, whatever, watching it at the bar or in a gym or in their office. And those numbers matter more now than they've ever done, especially with there being a large supporter base culture in the United States that, whether you're Arsenal Supporters Club or Spurs or whatever club it may be, going to your local pub and watching the game there. And those numbers become more and more important, as do digital numbers too, because there's less people watching television. So hopefully in the near future we'll have that interview to learn more about out-of-home. But this slots right into that. It makes it easier for soccer fans to be able to watch games out-of-home, which will, there's a large number of people that do watch Champions League in their local pub at lunchtime or take the afternoon off and go watch it, etc. But Kartik, the next news item is probably one that will be particular to you, right? Because you've had experience with this one.
Yeah, Chris, this unfortunately isn't very surprising to me. There has been speculation for a few years this would happen, but UVerse has disappeared from the AT&T websites, meaning no one's going to be able to sign up for it, for new service. And reportedly the service will be not offered anymore later this year. So that's unfortunate. UVerse has had, for years, I think, a very, very robust lineup of soccer channels, even offering Gold TV in English longer than any other major cable system. After Gold TV was dropped from systems, and there was a period of time when I had UVerse where I got Gold TV and was still being able to watch the Bundesliga after it had been dropped elsewhere, and obviously offered BN and offered all of the standard soccer channels that were on cable systems. So if you're going to sign up with AT&T, you're going to have to sign up with DirecTV or some other service.
Yeah, lots of changes from AT&T, lots of things happening there. The next news item is interesting because Fubo TV, which is the streaming service, has this week officially launched their Fubo Sports Network, which is a live, free-to-consumer TV network for sports fans with a heavy focus on soccer. So to get Fubo Sports Network, it comes with your standard base package on Fubo TV, but it's also available on smart TVs, LG channels, and also Samsung TV Plus, the Roku channel. So if you have a Roku box, you can get it through there. Zumo and more distribution partners to be announced in the future. The interesting thing about this, Kartik, is that they've added a lot of basically original programming to this network. So, for example, they have a show called it's called Call It a Night with Julie Stewart Binks, which is on Tuesdays and Thursdays, which features Julie Stewart Binks, formerly of Fox Sports. And let me go on. The next news item, the next show they've got is called The Players Lounge with Kobe Jones and PJ Harrison. And they also have The Cooligans, which is used to be an audio podcast, but now they also have a show in front of the cameras, as well as Drinks with Binks, which is, of course, with Julie Stewart Binks on Fridays, or Friday nights, as well as much more. What do you think about in terms of the original programming? Any interest in those for you?
Yeah, I think Julie Stewart Binks, JSB, she's always been partial to soccer. So and hockey's, I think, the other sport she's really, really into. She's covered some college football, so I think that will be pretty good. Kobe Jones, we'll see how he is in kind of the light atmosphere. We've seen him on the Fernando Fury shows with Fox, and, you know, I think of that what you might. This might be okay. And then, obviously, the Cooligans, I think, is a great little addition, Chris. So the thing that I like is Fubo's commitment. They started as a soccer channel or soccer streaming platform for soccer fans. Their continued commitment to the sport, even while they branched out into all kinds of other things in sports and entertainment. So I love that.
Yeah, I'm not impressed by this, to be honest with you. So the Cooligans, I mean, I think that really caters more to an MLS crowd or fans of
Correct.
MLS soccer.
Yeah.
So
a U.S. soccer crowd, I would say.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how appealing that is to viewers or subscribers to Fubo who are going to Fubo for, I mean, the beIN Sports and beIN Sports Connect and all your mostly kind of foreign soccer access to that. Julie Stewart Binks, I don't know. When she first joined Fox Sports, I reached out to try to get to interview her, and I was told basically privately that they didn't think that she had much of a soccer IQ, that at that time it would not be a good time to interview her. And then since then, I know that she really focused a lot of her time and energy on learning more about soccer in the United States, especially, and doing her homework and working really, really hard. And getting to a point where she was, you know, a great sideline reporter. But then she's had this new lease of life as a comedian, as a stand-up comedian. And that I haven't seen, so I don't know if she is funny and how she is with the on-camera presence there. I guess I'd have to watch it to know, you mean, whether or not it's worth watching. I'm just less than impressed by Fubo's selection of original programming on this one. I thought they could have done better. Last but not least, Kartik, one news item before we move on to TV ratings.
Yeah, not surprisingly, Chris, we've had La Liga move again in the UK. We knew when ITV picked them up and showed them on ITV for last season, it was probably a temporary arrangement for the second half of the year, but it was great to have La Liga or any football on free-to-air television in the UK, right? Because they're just Those again, we have to reiterate this every other podcast, it seems, but in the UK there are no free-to-air matches from the Premier League. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a satellite system, the way you see the Premier League is watching Match of the Day at the end of the day, or unfortunately illegal streams were part of it too. So anyway, La Liga is going to have its own TV channel on Sky in the UK by January with live games. This will be similar to, there's a Sky Premier League channel. This will be Sky La Liga, I presume. That's exciting news for those who want to see lots of wraparound coverage of Spanish football, which, by the way, La Liga is the second most popular league in the UK. It's the English fans follow a league outside England, it's generally the Spanish leagues. However, this once again puts them behind the paywall of Sky. And I guess it's six of one, half dozen of the other, right?
Yeah, it is strange, though, for us and a lot of listeners, I think, outside of the UK to hear about the struggles that La Liga is having in the UK. I mean, obviously in the United States and even the Middle East and around the world, La Liga is very accessible, you know, in terms of being able to watch, I mean, all the games, really. And in the UK, I mean, they were on 11 Sports, I think, last season, but then that deal fell apart, and 11 Sports had some problems there. So then they moved some of those games to ITV. But then the reality of the situation is the two biggest things that hurt La Liga in the UK are, one, the blackout. So no games on no soccer games at all in the UK between 3 p.m. and 5:15 local time there, which cuts out some of the big games in La Liga when there would be, you know, Barcelona's playing or Real Madrid often plays in that time slot. And then, I mean, the second thing is a lot of the games in La Liga, just as we in the United States say that the issue of the Bundesliga in the United States is a lot of those games are played at the same time as the Premier League games, and most people are going to choose the Premier League over the Bundesliga. Same thing for England, is a lot of those games in La Liga are played at the same time as the Premier League games, and the Premier League games are going to get more priority, more focus, more attention. So, yeah, it's challenging times for La Liga in the UK, but at least with Sky, at least those games will be televised. I mean, most of them. Or some of them, at least. All right, moving on to TV ratings. Kartik, we won't go into a lot of detail here, but there's just a huge gulf in difference for this last Friday's game between Mexico and the United States, between the English-language viewership and the Spanish-language viewership. And in some ways, it's not fair to actually kind of... to pull those apart, because someone like you, Kartik, English language speaker, preferring to watch the game on Univision because of, you mean, whether it's production values or whether it's, you mean, better coverage, really. But the numbers, for whatever reasons, the numbers really kind of say a lot about this. And also, going back to the first segment, talking about the United States and the disillusioned soccer fans in the U.S. They're again disillusioned with the U.S. team and will probably continue to do so as long as this long-term strategy is played out by Greg Berhalter. So the viewership numbers. All right, so 2.7 million people watched this game on Univision and TUDN. 2.7 million people watched that game. And then the same game on FS1, 386,000 viewers, which was less viewers than the number of people that tuned in to watch Bournemouth against Sheffield United on the opening weekend of the season that had, I think, 398,000 or something like that. Kartik, what's your take on this? Is it just that fans have given up on the U.S. men's national team, or are fans tuning into Univision rather than FS1?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, I watched it on Univision, TUDN. And same thing with the Uruguay match, which we don't have the number for yet. But I think it's also just disillusionment with the U.S. men's national team. This was a Friday night. People, I don't think, were aware of the match. It's a cash grab friendly. All kinds of things. Disillusionment with the international break. MLS, who had tried the last few seasons to really respect international breaks, has gone back to just playing not a full slate of games, but 5 to 6 matches international break weekend, because they've condensed the schedule, right? And now they don't have the ability to the international break, and respecting it was one of the reasons the MLS playoffs took so long, right? Because they were starting in October and running through December, because there were two international breaks in the middle of that. So I think there was just like even domestic soccer fans, no interest. USL plays a full slate. That having been said, I think a lot of people, myself included, have just switched to Univision and to the NA for U.S. games in general. I mean, even ESPN games, I might flip back and forth, but I'm always checking out Univision's coverage. Mm-hmm.
It's a disappointing. I guess for U.S. soccer probably looking at those numbers would be kind of scratching their heads, going like, "What's going on here?" Because I think in many ways, I mean, the Spanish language numbers are fantastic, but in many ways, I mean, the one game that you can count on to have a large viewership for a friendly would be U.S. against Mexico, but that rivalry seems to be overplayed. I mean, U.S. against Mexico. I mean, we play each other more often now, it seems, than we've ever done. So it takes off the shine of a game like that. Yes, it's a friendly. Yes, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. But if you can't get U.S. fans excited for USA against Mexico, there's an issue. And if the numbers on FS1 are so poor, what does that say about Fox's coverage? I mean, is there a disappointment, a disillusionment with the coverage of the U.S. men's national team? There are a lot of issues here for, I think, U.S. soccer to think about. And it's worrying signs, Kartik. It's going to be very few people, I think, really interested in USA against Cuba or even USA against Canada in the Nations League. And it's going to be a long time. I mean, I think it's, in many ways, at the end of the day, the thing that has to happen is for the U.S. men's national team and U.S. Soccer Federation is to get fans excited again, to kind of regain that trust. And that could take a decade before that happens, to a point where, you mean, the U.S. soccer fans can really believe in this team and believe in the federation, if that ever happens at all. Let's move on to the listener mailbag. Quite a lot of feedback this past week. So first up is John Average Geek, and he's talking about our complaints about the Bundesliga coverage on Fox, FS1 and FS2 that we talked about last week. He says, on the Fox coverage over last weekend, it was technical issues. Lallis's podcast mentioned it as the computers were down, which I find interesting because all of the other coverage of sports that happened before and after the Bundesliga that weekend seemed to be fine. But that's kind of strange that the computers were down and it really impacted the Bundesliga. You would think that they have a backup plan or something. It's just amateur hour from Fox Sports once again. Rico Richardson says, how is what MLS is doing a bad thing to protect their brand? Why would they tarnish something that isn't really part of the game? Why should MLS be political either way?
I'll answer this real quickly. The Independent Supporters Council, talk to them. Talk to supporters groups. They're the people who've really carried this league to this point. A lot of them were attracted to soccer for reasons maybe that a casual American football fan or casual basketball fan, not for reasons different than those people watching their sports. So I think it's a fundamental issue, whether you're on the left or the right, a fundamental issue of MLS not understanding their fan base, period. And potentially alienating, unless they fix this, which now they're going to meet with the ISC. So they might fix this. They finally realize the alarm bells are so loud that they have to deal with it. Not understanding the people who have bought merchandise, who have championed MLS, the people who, quite frankly, when you make criticisms of MLS, shoot back at you. Those sorts of people that have grown the league, particularly since Toronto and Seattle came into the league between 2007 and 2009, not knowing who those fans were. So that's what it is. It's not if you compare it to other sports leagues or you talk about, well, on the surface, it should be politically neutral. Yeah, I tend to agree with that, actually, as a overlying concept. But it's a little different here because of the reason why these fans were motivated to support MLS to begin with.
Next up is Nick Calvelli. He says, guess how many Bundesliga ads were on during the U.S. men's national team pregame versus Mexico? That's right, zero. I don't think I missed it. There were NFL, Major League Baseball, probably some college football, even a Liga MX quick plug. Zero on the Bundesliga. I'd argue that the NFL, Major League Baseball, doesn't need the plug, but smarter people than me clearly decided to focus more on mostly non-soccer ads during a soccer pregame. JP says, we can all agree Fox doesn't promote their Bundesliga coverage to the best of their abilities. I never see commercials for it during non-soccer events like NBC does with the Premier League. Guarantee they will there will be some promotion for next week's Premier League return, or this week's Premier League return to action during the Patriots-Steelers game on Sunday night. Would almost bet my life there'll be zero Bundesliga plugs during Fox's NFL coverage this weekend. At the same time, though, I don't see it improving if they move to ESPN+. The same concerns about lack of pre- and post-match studio analysis will be amplified, as ESPN Plus would have zero, while Fox at least provides it sporadically. Even for the Serie A match of the week shown on television, there isn't really any pre-match coverage. Last week for the Roma derby, it was preceded by SportsCenter, and the host mentioned the match next while signing off and pronounced Lazio incorrectly. Didn't notice any promotion for it during the week, during the US Open at least, only other event I watched on their channels. I still think the Bundesliga leaving Fox will end up being a downgrade. It's an entertaining league. We can only imagine what its popularity would be if Fox consistently showed matches over the air, like NBC does once a week, and used all of its affiliated distribution channels to promote it. Monty Reed says, on the African World Cup qualifying, several of the articles that I have read stated that the first round will be free on YouTube. Since FIFA took over the rights, I assume that FIFA is trying to sell the rights for the other rounds. Any word on who might be getting them? So, Monty, no word yet. And yes, the first round will be free on YouTube and I believe through FIFA.com. But in terms of the later rounds, I don't believe anyone's picked those up yet. And that's probably part of it, too, is that they want to make those games more accessible. Through YouTube and FIFA.com, and then hoping that they'll be able to sell some of those rights later on. Or if not, you continue to broadcast those on YouTube and FIFA.com. Coolio Two Foots says, thank you for addressing the issue of bait and switch with match starting times. It's a real put off when you have to wait another 20 or more minutes before the match starts. Nicholas says, in Africa, Europe, and Asia, games always start on time. Do you think that MLS not starting games on time is hurting the league to grow? I am the biggest MLS fan, but I like the game that I like bigger games that begin on time. Imagine a Premier League system is like MLS; the interest is probably can go down. So Nicholas, I think this is an actual, this is one of many variables, but this is one factor. I mean, it's so frustrating when a game is advertised at a certain time. And we talked about this last week's podcast, talking about the USA against Mexico. I think it was advertised as an 8:30 kickoff, start time, basically. But the game didn't begin till 9:08. And I looked at the pregame numbers to see the pregame for USA against Mexico and FS1. So with this bait and switch thing where Fox is advertising the 8:30 USA-Mexico, the 8:30 to 9 o'clock broadcast had, I think, 89,000 viewers. So hardly anyone's tuning in to even watch the pre-match. And I think word is getting out finally, and people are kind of understanding. If anything, it's probably more likely now that soccer fans in the United States are better educated and will tune in later, knowing that the broadcast is not going to start at 8:30. We'll tune in later thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll tune in a half an hour later and then catch the start of the game. And that's dangerous too, because you mean sometimes, especially for the broadcasters, you mean that means that fans are coming in even later than what the actual kickoff time might be. So if they come in at 9:15 or 9:20, thinking that's what time the game is going to start, when it actually kicked off at 9:08, even though it wasn't advertised, they're losing viewers. So to me, it's like, okay, just be honest, be transparent. Even if the kickoff time is 9:08, say, okay, right, pre-match starts at 8:30. We're going to have some analysis, we're going to have some news, we're going to have some discussion, and the game kicks off at 9:08. I mean, I don't understand why they cannot be transparent and honest rather than using this bait-and-switch tactic, which the same thing happens for MLS games and U.S. men's national team games. It pisses me off. Aram says, also known as Kochi Ball Games, says, Saturday's NYCFC game against New England Revolution match was advertised as being available only on Univision and streaming on Twitter. But the Twitter stream didn't start until half hour into the game. So fans like me missed the opening goal and red card. Judging by the replies to the tweets below, I wasn't the only one upset about the stream being unavailable. If MLS can't make its games available to watch for hardcore fans, how will they ever attract a mainstream audience? Next up is Robert Thompson. Robert says, just had a chance to listen to last week's podcast. I also watched games on September 1st. I just watched a little bit of the Burnley versus the Liverpool game. It was too uneven. Later, all of the Spurs versus Arsenal match, a sloppy game for teams with so many millionaires on the pitch. The best game of the day for excitement was Seattle against LA Galaxy. Also sloppy at times, but very exciting at the same time. Much better than the hyped North London derby. Sure, the level of play is generally better, as it should be when teams have a shed loads of money and can vacuum up many of the world's best players. The about £1.5 billion spent during this year's transfer period is probably more than the entire payroll for Major League Soccer. With Major League Soccer, you get competition and excitement. Is that not what the game should be about? Look at the West table. Most of the teams are still in contention. The table for the Premier League next March will probably show the same teams at the top. My favourites, Leicester, may make the top six, with Chelsea, Man United and Arsenal loaded with overpaid loafers. So that's his first point. And the second point, Kartik, is what's your view of the two versions of the U.S. men's national team? The first had a team against Mexico. The first had a team mostly manned with European-based players. The second with mostly U.S.-based players. The result, a blowout and a game that should have been won if the clear handball was called and Aaron Long had not done his Harry Maguire imitation.
Let me address that point. People consider me an MLS, a lot of people unfairly judge me as an MLS hater. I, in fact, am an advocate for more MLS-based players and less European-based players in the national team going forward. And I have not written the article yet at The Yanks Are Coming, but I'm working on it. Just a lot of delays. I believe if we're ever going to implement a national playing style, it has to come through MLS. And I'd like more and more of our national team guys back in MLS. Guys like Pulisic are an exception. You want them at the best clubs in the world. But I'd like to have guys in our domestic league so they're actually learning and playing the same way the national team is playing. Now, that would also involve MLS coaches buying into Berhalter's philosophy, which they haven't yet. It's easier said than done. But I am actually an advocate that eventually 2026, I look at what Russia did in 2018, where everybody, with one exception, you know, a player who's basically Spanish anyway, were back in their domestic league after they had tons of guys in the Bundesliga, the Premier League, Serie A, wherever, 8 to 10 years earlier. That's what I'd like to see. But MLS has to buy in also. And at this point, they seem, despite their rhetoric, less concerned about developing the American player than they've ever been. So, but I am actually an advocate, theoretically, of less European guys and more MLS-based guys in the national team. I'd like to see us go that direction, but other parties have to buy in.
Quinton says, great podcast. I currently subscribe to NBC Sports Gold, ESPN Plus, Sling TV for beIN Sports, and Fox Soccer Match Pass. Although I love following all of the major leagues, my favorite is the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2. Thankfully, Fox covers the second division. However, the Division 2 games are televised via Fox Soccer Match Pass are done without the commentary and no game clock or box score on the screen. This really takes away from the viewing experience. Do you know if Bundesliga 2 games will be included next year when the Bundesliga moves to ESPN Plus? Which I can answer that question and say, Quinton, that if the Bundesliga moves to ESPN Plus, which looks like it's likely to happen, the Bundesliga 2 games will move with them too. So it's going to be a whole package. So anyway, he says, if so, any chance that they will include German Bundesliga 3 as well? I doubt it. I really, really do. Finally, do you know if this move will result in an increase in the subscription fee for ESPN Plus? Today, I pay $5 a month for ESPN Plus and $20 a month for Fox Soccer Match Pass. Looking forward to saving my $20 with the Bundesliga move. Keep up the great work. So we've talked about this in the past, but I feel strongly that ESPN Plus is going to keep that same price point for a few years. They're in the name of the game right now is acquiring subscribers, is pulling in people, getting people, getting over the obstacles and challenges that people kind of think, okay, like, ah, streaming is so expensive, or it's gonna, I have to subscribe to this and this and this. They're going to try to make it as easy as possible, and also offering Disney Plus and other things to get you used to using ESPN Plus, and to get you to be, I mean, loving the service, loving the quality, all that. And then maybe in a few years to increase the price at that point. But right now they're in the acquisition game. So it's very likely that you will be saving $20 or more a month by watching it through ESPN Plus instead of the Fox Soccer Match Pass. Which actually begs the question too about Fox Soccer Match Pass. You take the Bundesliga out of that, what's left? Which is hardly anything. Ryan Hawkins says, great job with the show. From breaking the La Liga beIN Sports deal to keeping me updated on the newest leagues to join on ESPN Plus, you guys compile info like no one else in this American soccer media landscape. This might have flown under the radar, but the Colorado Rapids are in dispute and lost carriage of the Kroenke-owned sports network with Dish Network, DirecTV, and Comcast about a week and a half ago. At the moment, there are literally no ways to watch the Rapids for a vast majority of the Rapids territorial area. There are a few outliers, small cable companies in rural areas that still have the Altitude network, but not many. I don't see the MLS TV model as too sustainable, and I predict that more of these outages will happen in the future. 2022 and the new MLS TV deal can't come soon enough. As an update, Altitude is exploring a potential Amazon deal. So yeah, I don't like it. I don't like the local sports market in terms of the US. I'd rather have national broadcasts that I can count on. They can say, okay, hey, even if it's streaming, I know I can say, I mean, these games are on ESPN Plus. If it's nationally televised, I know that it'll be on even either Univision, one of the Fox channels, or on ESPN or one of the ESPN channels. And the local sports markets for soccer gets very complicated. It's an obstacle. It's a challenge. It actually makes it harder to watch soccer, no matter what team you support, based on where you're living and blackouts and all that. It's just too complicated for today's day and age, where it's easier to stream a game illegally than it is to jump through the hoops of figuring out your local TV market and which channel has it and which TV provider carries Altitude Sports, for example. Last but not least, Vincent DeRosco has 2 points. This should be interesting, Karthik, to get your take on this. I have a question. I'll do the first part of it. I have a question for you guys about USA-Mexico coverage that was on FS1 from Friday. In my opinion, the voice of U.S. soccer is Taylor Twellman. How come we haven't heard from the voice of U.S. soccer? It's been over 48 hours now. So Vincent sent this, I guess, over the weekend, probably on, I think, Sunday or Monday. And my take on this, Karthik, is that, I don't know. Taylor Twellman's Twitter feed is, I mean, the game happened on a Friday, and he's big time into NFL, college football, I mean, any other sport other than soccer, he's tweeting about all the time, and it seems less and less of his analysis or his comments are about soccer. It's mostly, which I follow Taylor Twellman not for his NFL coverage or basketball coverage or coverage of all these other sports. I follow him because I'm interested in his takes on soccer. And as Vincent mentioned too, there's 48 hours without really any analysis. I guess the other part of that too, though, is that Taylor works for ESPN, and ESPN didn't have the rights to that game, and it was on Fox, and the next game is on, the USA-Uruguay game was on Fox too, so he probably wasn't as, well, he was plugged in, but he probably, if those games had been on ESPN, I think he probably would have been more vocal in terms of his analysis. And Karthik, I'll have you answer the second part. So Vincent Orozco continues to say, I have a question for you guys. I was at a soccer bar watching the USA against Uruguay game, and I started a conversation with 3 USA fans and told them, in my opinion, that Univision has better coverage of the US men's national team than Fox, and ESPN does what they did not agree with. Anyway, and ESPN, they did not agree with me. Instead, I was biased because I was Hispanic. I then told them that they have a former U.S. national team player named Marcelo Balboa, who is an analyst and does really good work there. They had no idea that he was a former player for the U.S. men's national team and one that is in the Hall of Fame. these are fans, and if you ask them, they will tell you they're very knowledgeable about soccer and soccer coverage. Do you guys run across the same or similar fans where you are from?
Yes.
That's like the shortest answer to a question ever, Kartik, from you.
No. I think that this is a problem with a lot of anglicized American soccer fans who just assume anyone who's on Univision is pro-Mexico, firstly. And secondly, assume the only people who are interested in the U.S. men's national team are watching the game in English. So I don't know how this subculture developed. I don't think it was like this in the past. In fact, I think 10 years ago, people who were fans of the national team and fans of MLS tended to really embrace the fact that we had more games on Univision and Telemundo than other networks. It is quite weird. I mean, it's almost a stunning thing when you think about Chelo Balboa, who's one of the greats in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. And I know you'd agree with that, Chris. Yeah. Just to think that there would be that level of ignorance among so-called hardcore U.S. fans. And I've noticed it before. I just, yeah. If you gave me time, I'd come up with some examples. I don't have it offhand, Vincent, but I have absolutely observed that. 100%.
It's interesting, though, too, Kartik, because in terms of our coverage and analysis of the Spanish language soccer media in the United States, too, we probably cover the Spanish language soccer networks in English. You and I are speaking English right now, probably more than any other outlets in the United States in terms of even talking about what they're covering, talking about the TV ratings, talking about how well Liga MX is doing. There are very few English language speaking, whether podcasts or websites, that go into that. It's very segregated. It's very, if you like Spanish language soccer, or coverage, you go to those sites that are written in Spanish language. So we're kind of in between where we see both sides. What I find interesting, Kartik, is that I often hear from a lot of soccer fans that watch more coverage on Spanish language television that they don't like the coverage from Univision, that they think the Univision guys are, there's too much, I guess, promos or too much advertising. And again, too, for us, the English language soccer viewers, I mean, we have our own tastes and differences too. So like, I prefer NBC's coverage of the Premier League versus what Fox had been doing in the past, and ESPN's coverage was good also in the past when they had the Premier League, but it was different. Different strokes for different folks, but I always find it interesting that hearing the analysis, hearing the opinions from soccer fans and saying like, oh yeah, I don't like Univision's coverage, Telemundo's is much better. So which is natural, but I always have to kind of chuckle at that when I hear that stuff. But yeah, definitely good points. And from Vincent, it sounded like he was going to say a joke. I started a conversation with three USA fans walking into a bar. I was waiting for a punchline there too. All right, guys, you can always join the conversation with us. You can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. We would love to read those out on air and have a discussion and answer some questions about streaming, TV coverage, you name it. Kartik, before we close, looking at this weekend's matches, lots to choose from. Do you have any picks of the week?
I'm actually interested in seeing Watford-Arsenal.
Yeah.
Because I want to see Kiki Sanchez-Flores, who is, I would admit, one of my favorite managers. I was talking to a colleague of mine that's an Atletico Madrid fan. She just loves him. Back at Watford, I feel sorry for Javi Gracia. I think he did a good job, but Kiki Sanchez-Flores never should have been sacked in the first place. So glad to have him back in the Premier League, glad to have him back in Europe, and looking forward to that match and see if there's a new manager bounce for them. That's on NBC, by the way. That's the over-the-air match on Saturday.
It never fails, Kartik. Whenever there's an international break, if I'm a Watford manager, I'm like, oh, gosh, I'm waiting for that phone call. I'm waiting for that knock on the door. It always seems to happen. Right. it's like clock.
Yeah, the Pozo family loves international breaks. By the way, they've done that with Granada and Udinese also when they've sacked managers, if you don't follow those leagues. they take advantage of that two-week international break. It's almost inevitable every time.
Right. Well, my pick of the week is not on television. It is on iFollow, if you're into championship games. And I'm leaving today, Kartik, to head to South Wales to go watch Swansea City, top of the championship, against Nottingham Forest. on Saturday, which is going to be a 10 a.m. Eastern kickoff. Forest actually are playing really well. They're on an unbeaten run, and Swansea City in first place after beating Leeds United a couple of weeks ago. I'm super excited to take my wife to this one, to the Liberty, which will actually be my first game ever at the Liberty. Every time I go to Wales, either Swansea are playing away or it's during the summertime when there's no games on. So it's actually my first opportunity to actually go inside the stadium at the Liberty. I've gone outside it, gone in the club shop, all that stuff. But I'm super excited about this one and looking forward to seeing a game. Actually, and the reason I'm going over, Kartik, is to celebrate my 50th birthday. So I'm going to... God, I'm getting old. But going to go over.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. So I'm going to go over there and celebrate the 50th in style, hopefully, and hopefully come back with 3 points. But I'm sure in the next podcast, which will probably be out on Friday, September 20th, just because I'll be flying back in on the 19th. Hopefully I'll have some interesting stories to tell in regards to that. So listeners, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you have a Google Home, you can tell Google to go ahead and play the World Soccer Talk podcast, and it should bring up the latest episode. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into another weekend of soccer, the international break is over, club football has returned. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.